This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today we have a special guest with us, Josh Kohler. How are you, Josh?
I'm doing good, guys. I'm really excited to be inside the Wolf's Den and ready to go.
Yes, so, we're excited to have you. So thank you. And just a quick bio on Josh. So Josh has been in the real estate investing industry since 2013 and has been a part of hundreds of deals as a marketing director, CEO of Kohler Media, a service provider that offers full social media management along with YouTube, podcasting, and other forms of content marketing, primarily working with those in the real estate investing education space. So again, thanks again for joining us. Why don't you give us a little background on yourself? How did this all get started?
Yeah, of course. And before we even recorded, I kind of gave you guys like the 1,000-foot view. And
Yes, you did.
It's a pretty interesting story, but yeah, I had just turned 19 years old. I hadn't gone to college. I'll keep this short and sweet, by the way, so that we can get into it. If you guys want to learn more about me, go like follow me on social media. Yeah. We'll just say that. Okay. So I'm 19 years old. I started working with a local wholesaler, a guy that I actually, a friend of mine that I played basketball with, his dad owned about 500 rentals in the area. Uh-huh. And they were kind of like flying under the radar type investors. And so I started working for them and they had me doing just about everything from like putting bandit signs out to, so I did run into the code enforcement people quite a bit, especially the ones in Illinois. But then I was doing Craigslist postings, at the time, Facebook, you know, the Facebook postings on the groups and stuff like that, mm-hmm. just all kinds of other stuff dealing with, acquisitions and dispositions and stuff like that. I worked for them for about 6-7 months. And then my good buddy, Gary Harper, called me up and, he had heard that I was actually looking for something else. And he told me that he was partners with a couple other guys that were running a large wholesaling organization out here in the Midwest. Uh-huh. And he asked me to come work for him. So it's kind of funny, for those of you, if you're listening, know Gary Harper.
Yes.
He invests in real estate, but his primary business is business systems and processes, right? His primary source of income is not investing in real estate.
Right.
But he and I both realized that we kind of didn't really like real estate all that much. And so we were trying to figure out how we could, buy and sell deals. And remember, this is like 2012, 13, 14, 15. The market was drastically different. Uh-huh. Acquisitions was placing bids on HUD, auction, MLS. Mm. It wasn't anything what it is today. Very rarely did we buy anything from motivated seller leads. And the main game at the time in wholesaling was disposition. So it was mm-hmm. building a very solid cash buyers list and, you know, pampering them and bringing them deals and almost basically reverse wholesaling what it was. So we, not saying that we found or coined the term at all, but we started doing virtual wholesaling. So we were buying and selling for Gary and I, we were out in Michigan and Ohio. Our organization also was operating in Indiana, Illinois. Mm-hmm. But Gary and I were specifically in charge of those two states. And so we had one person that would go out to the properties that were under the contract. They would pre-look them for us, send us pictures and do video walkthroughs and stuff like that. And then that's how we would buy and sell the deals. And so we did, I think the first year that he and I were together, I was 20 at the time. We did, I believe, just over 60 deals in Michigan alone. And that was 100% virtually. He and I did not visit any of those. And so I stuck with them for quite a while. And then in kind of speeding up that time, I went into my own business in March of 2019. So it's been 4 years this March 1. So it's been a very quick 4 years, uh-huh. but 4 years nonetheless. Yeah. And so now what we do is we 100% service, just because we have a strong foothold in this industry, real estate investors, people that are in the space, primarily like the bio said, educators and people I got coaching programs, courses and mastermind groups, stuff like that. And we manage social media fully, YouTube, podcast, and I do a lot of consulting with that as well. Yeah. So that's the story.
That's amazing. We met you in a mastermind, of course. Like all of our guests came from the mastermind, right? We have been able to build relationships with just awesome people like you. But I never heard that story, so that's awesome to hear that. But kind of go into, so you worked for, when you're 19 and taking that leap of faith to actually go out on your own, like That's pretty scary. Like, how did you do that? You know, how did you get through that?
What's interesting about that is that you talked about mastermind. So mm-hmm. the first time, so you and all three of us actually met at Collective Genius.
Right.
And the first mastermind I ever went to was Collective Genius when I was 21 years old.
Wow.
I went with Gary and his brother-in-law, Wayne, which at the time, that's who was part of the organization. And I believe Wayne's still in Collective Genius as well. And so I was a marketing director at the time, 21 years old, still trying to learn everything about not just marketing, but life in general. and so they took me, they're like, this is going to be good for you. It's going to be a little bit of culture shock, but it's going to be good for you. So I walk in and I remember seeing, like, it was pretty interesting. I remember seeing, you know, Wendy Sweet. I sat next to Steve Carlson. Billy Alvaro was across the table, Mike Osborne, and just a bunch of other people, Matt Terrio. Like, there was a bunch of other people that I have really, really solid friendships with today that I didn't know who any of these people were, but as they were talking and up in front of, you know, the room, it was insane. It was just a totally different level and experience that I had. And it was one of those moments where I realized, like, man, I really need to dig deeper into, you know, bettering myself and that kind of thing. And at 21 years old, you know, I didn't go to college or anything. I'm a terrible student. So I barely passed high school. And that I'm one of those types of learners. So I really focused and determined that, like, and just from hearing from other people, you know, it's the, you know, cliche Jim Rohn statement is you are the average of the five people that you associate with the most.
So true.
And so I started just hanging out with Gary a lot more. That helped a lot. You know, we're in an office every day together. And then just many other people networking and that kind of thing that really helped build a lot of confidence in myself. Mm-hmm, but also, mm-hmm. you know, I think a lot of people, and this is a really good segue into social media, of course, but and content marketing and marketing as a whole. But a lot of times, you know, one of the biggest reasons why humans don't do stuff is because of fear.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the biggest facilitators of fear is lack of knowledge.
Right.
Like, a lot of times we don't do stuff because we don't know about what we're doing. We don't know enough about it, or we know the negative side of it. We don't know what the positive sides are. And so I spent a lot of time educating myself, not just by reading books or listening to podcasts, but talking to people that were smarter than me. And Gary at one point told me, he's like, you know, and I'm sure he heard this from somebody else as well, but he at one point told me, you know, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Mm-hmm.
And so I consistently try to put myself in rooms where I was literally the bottom person. And that can be humbling often.
It can be
a very humbling experience walking into a room where you are literally the stupidest person in the room.
Yeah. That's how Collective Genius.
We felt that same way when we entered Collective, or you did.
Yeah, I was the first one. And that was back when it was like Sean Terry, I think Kent Clothier, Cody Sperber was in there at the time.
It was like, stacked.
Yeah, I was like, man, I'm like a small fish in this thing. But it's cool. But yeah, I appreciate that. I'm sorry, did we interrupt you? Keep going.
Well, no, that's essentially what happened was I like surrounded myself with right people. So then when I felt like it was time, and I had been operating my media business on the side as a side hustle anyway for quite a while. At the time I was doing branding and a lot of video work. And then it was to a point where my side hustle was eclipsing my primary income at my full-time position like three times over. And so I'm like, well, I guess it's time now.
Yeah.
And one of the, you know, I went through essentially my board of advisors of people that I had. There was five people that I talked to that owned businesses that were personal friends of mine that I got on a phone call with and talked about going full-time in a business. I'm a risky person, but I am a calculated risk taker. I'm a little patient. I'm a driver, but I'm patient.
Mm-hmm.
And so Gary Harper was the last person I talked to because he's one of my closest friends. And as soon as I was done talking to him, I was like, yeah, it's time. So then I gave a 2-week notice and went full-time in the business. And it was like,
awesome.
It was all based on the people that I surrounded myself with.
Yeah.
It was literally that simple.
I think that's awesome. Cause you don't hear that very often. I think people probably jump and not as calculated, you know, as you were. And I think that's how you did it. Sounds like, you know, that's the way we would recommend if somebody started. So,
absolutely.
So tell us a little bit, let's go into like content marketing. Cause like just the take it back to elementary. Like, so, you know, I think people just hear marketing, but, and they just all assume, you know, it's all one thing. There's pay-per-click, there's Google, there's direct marketing, like in real estate with postcards and mail and texting, but what can you explain what is content marketing?
Yeah, of course. So that's a good point that you bring up. In the world of marketing, there are, oh my gosh, there's hundreds of different of you know, types of expertises that go into marketing, media, content, mm-hmm. social media, mm-hmm. paid advertising. There's just all kinds of different silos that people fall in. And even in my business, the services that we offer, you know, I don't have a whole lot up until maybe about a year ago, I had almost no competition. And it's one of those things that it's a very core expertise. And there's a lot of people that say do web development or paid traffic, or even in the real estate space is motivated lead generation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the list goes on. But when it comes to content marketing, the best way that I can explain it is that I always say paid advertising can be a sprint, whereas content marketing is a marathon. Mm-hmm. You're ultimately battling for the longevity of your marketing. And let's be clear, content marketing has the word marketing in it for a reason. And when I say content marketing, I'm throwing in social media, YouTube, podcasting, because it's all content. Mm-hmm. But people treat it as it's like its own separate thing, but it's real. If you're a business owner, it's not. It shouldn't mm-hmm. be treated any different than just actual marketing. So my definition for content marketing is answering the question that your target demographic has about your services, your products, or your industry. And you do that in many different mediums. You can do it on video, of course. You do it on podcast, email newsletters, social media posts, graphic mm-hmm. designs, bandit signs, whatever. Like there's however you get it out to your target demographic, which of course we can discuss. But that's really what it is. And it's just as simple as that. And I think that the biggest component of this is answering the questions. So mm-hmm. a lot of people struggle with what topics do I talk about? What do I discuss in this content? You're literally just taking questions that your target demographic has about you, about your industry, about the services, the products that you offer, and just answer those questions in that form. And that's honestly the best way to do it.
Yeah.
And why do you feel it's a company or if you're trying to develop your own brand, I guess you could target that as well, but for you individually, but why is it important? Why, if say people are saying, no, I just do Google or, you know, or direct marketing, I don't need to do this content marketing, I don't need to have a YouTube page, or just explain the significance behind it, I guess. And you kind of did okay. with the marathon and the sprint, and I get that part, but take it a little deeper. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a phenomenal question, and it's, my answer is probably going to be a little bit different than what you might expect from a social media agency or Google mm-hmm. or whatever you want to call me. So I will go back to my conversation of it's marketing. There are some businesses out there that it's not necessarily that social media or content marketing doesn't work for their business. It's more of the question of what works the best.
Right.
Again, we just stated that in the marketing world, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of different marketing tactics that any business can do. Mm-hmm. Of course, depending on the industry you're in, say for instance, if you're a wholesaler and you're listening, like there's certain things that you do that, you know, text blasting or direct mailers to your motivated seller leads, like that's all stuff that you probably should do because it works. But I always go back to like what works, not necessarily if it's not broken, don't fix it scenario. You have to innovate what you're doing, of course, and make it better. But I like to use the analogy of like pouring fuel on the fire that you have. If you don't have a fire existing, then of course, explore the world of social media or mm-hmm. content marketing. But if you have something, you know, I get that question a lot, Sean, is, you know, I had a client one time that came to me and the guy runs about $100,000 in Facebook ads a month. And we were putting a great organic content out for them. And of course, again, paid traffic is a sprint and content marketing is more of it's a marathon. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a lot longer mm-hmm. to develop that kind of presence. And of course, the perfect scenario is both at the same time working together. But they were doing a little bit of testing on both sides. And the reality is that they have their paid traffic down so tight. It was generating anywhere from like a 500 to 1,000% return on all of their paid traffic. Mm-hmm. And of course, the danger is that you're relying on a platform that you don't own to bring in money to build your business. Okay. Right. That's a totally different conversation. But the reality is that they really didn't need our services and our content to be a successful organization. Mm. That being said, they figured one thing out, one method that works for them. So they ran with that. And that's where I look at that and say, okay, what we have to offer for you is probably not the best fit for you. You do more of this, because if you allocate the resources and the funds that you were paying me and you pour it on this, it's just going to generate even more results. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening right now and you're wondering, like, social media, content marketing, is it something I should do? The reaction for most people nowadays is an automatic yes. And that would probably overall in general be my answer, is yes, you need mm-hmm. to be on it. Mm-hmm. But what I would encourage more is to be as specific as possible with what your tendencies are, what your goals for the marketing overall is for you, whether mm-hmm. that's, you know, getting coaching students in your program, getting motivated seller leads, getting more people to buy from your donut shop. It doesn't matter what it is. You need to have an objective of what you're driving people to and craft everything that you do centered around that, and everything else is noise to you. And that's the way I would look at it.
That's awesome. Now that we're talking about that, at what stage should a company start using content marketing?
Right away would be the answer. Of course, mm-hmm. you know, so for instance, I always tell people one of the best ways to come up with topics for content to let's be clear, like 85% of the internet's traffic is video content. So let's just say video content, right? Just for the sake of, like, that's basically what people boil down content to be, is video. So let's say, for instance, if you need topics for video content and you're, you know, of course we're in real estate space. Mm-hmm. So if you're a wholesaler and you've never done a deal before, my method for getting topics is, you know, basically writing down every question that a motivated seller lead would have for you and then shoot videos on that to open it up. Now, if you're just starting off, you probably don't have those, but you definitely have competition. So go see what they're doing on their platforms and take off with that. Mm-hmm. That's a great way to get started. But yes, you need to get started and you need to be as specific as possible. And ultimately, the overarching factor is making sure that you're innovating your message, you're dialing in your specific branding and what you're saying on video, and, you know, differentiating yourself in some way, because everybody starts at zero.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everybody does. Doesn't matter who it is. Yeah. You guys have had this podcast going for a while. You mm-hmm. started at zero, mm-hmm. just like everybody else. Okay. So you have to get that out of your head. And again, that's why I look at it as it's a marathon. It's going to be a slow start, but the consistency over a long period of time of doing the fundamentals correctly is what's going to make you successful in this. And that's what I would just encourage people to do. Because, and you guys know this, people will get into it like 2-3 months in, they'll be fired up about it and then they stop.
Yeah. And that's the whole key there, like being consistent, right? Yeah. Like anything though, it's just being consistent.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen it over and over again. Why do you think that's so hard though? Like, I think people struggle with content. I know, I'll raise my hand. I struggle with it. Joni's a lot better at it. That's why you see us a lot more present, is because Joni's great at it. I suck at it. And I don't desire at all to do it, but I know it's important. But I guess is it because it's so difficult to put yourself out there? And I think you hinted at that earlier, but do you think that's why, like, because you're having to put yourself out there, and so a lot of companies or products or brands are, I think, do it last, is because there's a sense of vulnerability. Do you get what I'm getting at?
Okay. So what you said specifically there, I believe, is a symptom. There are three root causes to why either people won't do social media stuff or they fail at it, whether it fizzles out, they don't stay consistent, or uh-huh. they just stop, or they think it doesn't work. But when, you know, so like when it comes down to it, one of those objectives is, you know, I'm uncomfortable on camera, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Let me address that first. Yeah. And then I'll get into the three core reasons why. Just suck it up. Like, I flew into
a... Golly, you don't have to... I felt like I just got hit.
Thank you, Josh, for saying that.
That came from the bottom of my heart. Okay, I wrapped that up in red wrapping paper, and I said, Sean, this is for you. I love you. So I flew out to Pennsylvania last week to speak at a meetup, and somebody asked me the same question. I had the same response, and that was like literally off the cuff. But in today's society, like, there's stuff as business owners that we do that we absolutely hate doing, but we know we have to do it.
Yeah.
And here's the reality, is that if you don't do it, your competition, you could be for sure that your competition is going to do it.
Right.
Whether it's all of them or just one of your pieces of competition, and then they master it and they excel past you. And that can be a motivating factor for a lot of people. But again, I believe that that is a, I believe that's a symptom. So the root causes that I have boiled this down to is it's 3 points, and there's a lot that goes into these 3 points, but it's direction, it's personnel. Mm-hmm. And with those two, that's typically the sum of it. So I'll go to the third one here in a second, but with direction, generally that means, you know, I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm mm-hmm. doing social media videos. I stood up at a mastermind. Somebody said I spoke well, I should start a social media, campaign. And I don't really know why I'm doing it. So I'm putting videos out there, or their leads have no direction. Mm-hmm. So if somebody did want to work with them in some way, shape or form, they don't know how to drop into your funnel essentially. So direction can be many things. Personnel. So it's like, you have the wrong people implementing for you. You have the right people in the wrong seat. Mm-hmm. You have, you know, a social media manager that doesn't really know what they're doing. You have a video editor that doesn't get context of what videos that you're putting out. You know, they don't have really good value points mm-hmm. that they're clipping from your podcast for the micro content. There's personnel can be a really big issue with consistency as well. Normally when I'm consulting with somebody and they say, you know, I'm not able to stay consistent. Like I'm trying to get my social media manager to be on a calendar and stuff like that. And I always throw it out the window. I'll go back to what my good pal Gary Harper will say is processes and systems. Yeah. If you don't have those outlined, then they will not stay consistent. The reality is that creatives are the most difficult people in the world. The type of personality to maintain and manage because normally they're perfectionists. They have no sense of urgency and they have no timelines. They have mm-hmm. no sense of deadlines, timelines. So if you don't have proper systems and processes in place to hold them accountable for all three of those things, then you're ultimately a failure. And that's what, you know, in our organization, we've invested so much time and effort in. Mm-hmm. The third thing is really expectations. So it's direction, it's personnel and expectations. A lot of times, take for instance, you guys being the CEO of your organizations, is, you know, people will come in and they'll say, you know, I really want this. I saw this person's doing this. We need to like start posting this way, or we need to start a podcast because this person started in our industry. And then they hire personnel that like they think is good for their budget, but then they can't meet those expectations.
Right.
You know, so that's a really big issue as well. And so the perceived failure can just be an expectation problem. Mm-hmm. It could be that there is some success underlying, but your expectations are way up here. And of course, like in my organization, I call myself a full-time expectation manager. So when we work with clients, I'm setting the bar for them and I'm really like hitting home, like, okay, what do you want out of working with us? And then they tell me this, I'm like, oh, I can't actually deliver that. Like I need to bring you this way. And that's oftentimes why, the perceived failure of social media comes to fruition. So those mm-hmm. are the three things. And so I think for your point, Sean, it's really direction is, and personnel could be an additional thing mm-hmm. to that of why people feel uncomfortable on camera. Maybe they're not the right person to be in front of the camera mm-hmm. in their organization, but also maybe they don't have the full understanding of what to do when they're recording content. Maybe they don't know what topics to talk about. They don't know how to set up their gear or how long to go in their content, stuff like that. So those are the root causes. So
I hope everybody's taking notes because this is really
good stuff. Yeah, and as you grow and scale in your business as entrepreneurs, like I love outsourcing, by the way. Like why bring in people, you know, and not know if it's going to work or not when you can look to the experts like yourself who can help direct, you know, what's working and what's not, right?
So summarize, it's direction, personnel, and then expectations.
Yes.
And into your whole marketing effort should have the direction, right, that you want to head with your content and the goal that you're trying to accomplish. So whether you're doing direct paid advertising or content marketing, you recommend a kind of like the whole umbrella of it all, as long as it's moving you towards your the goal or what you're trying to accomplish with the leads or the who you're trying mm-hmm. to close. Is that
So there's quite a few organizations that we work with where they have a full-time marketing director and that they have people underneath them that are, say, their internal graphic designers, their internal you know, ad managers or whatever, web developers. Mm-hmm. And we meet with them consistently because we have to make sure that what we're doing lines up with what they're doing. Because if it doesn't, that's a danger a lot of times in outsourcing, right? So if you get a third party service provider, a lot of times it can be very hard to have that, or it can be very easy to have a disconnect between your internal marketing strategies and then the marketing strategies that, say, the service provider is doing. So it's very important to have somebody that can align all of those stars together so that it's ultimately getting everybody in the right boat and everybody's rowing down the river in the right direction. And in the same direction is the most important piece. You don't know how many people I've seen in their social presence. They have so many different styles of videos and their paid traffic doesn't look similar to their organic traffic. Their website looks off from their, you know, Instagram page. There's just a lot of disconnects and none of it works together. And in marketing, the thing about marketing is you got to hit people in their motivation. But if you hit them wrong because you're off in your alignments, say on your Instagram mm-hmm. post or on your Facebook ad, then it's going to create a disconnect. It creates confusion and people won't move forward if they're confused. It doesn't matter how deep they're confused. If they even have one question in their mind, mm-hmm. and that's where I go back to the definition of content marketing is answering the questions that your target demographic mm-hmm. has about what you do. Yeah. So it is very important to make sure that you have all marketing efforts. And that's why I go back to conversation of throwing social media and content marketing into the same canister of the marketing umbrella mm-hmm. altogether. Yeah. Because if you don't, that's why I said earlier, is that a lot of people detach that. Yeah. It has to be the same thing.
Two questions that came up with all that, but this is good stuff. The first one was
we can go longer if you need to.
Sean might be posting after this, Josh. Yeah, you might see him on social after this.
Good.
I'm gonna tag you. Do you feel like I guess the personnel I'm speaking to, part of your three.
Yeah.
Who do you really, in your opinion, you feel should be doing that for a company? Like, should it be, you know, should it be the ownership? Should it be the BDM? Should it be the, you know, and should it be the marketing department or the marketing director? And I wonder if they leave, does that create disconnect, you know, if somebody else starts showing up on camera? I'm just curious. You've been exposed to a lot more than we have. Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. That's, of course, like where it comes into the question is like, okay, well, if this person, so if I get my acquisitions manager on a video for directed towards my motivated seller leads, because it's a, you know, it's a drip campaign for emails or whatever, or it's on my YouTube channel that's plugged into my website, whatever it is, that's always a concern. Of course, you're never going to be able to really battle that in a way, right? There's variables that are kind of outside sources that can impact that kind of thing. Of course, there could always be the conversation of like, if you're a business partner with somebody and you part ways with that person, well, you're in the same conversation there at that point. Mm-hmm. So what I say is that's why, you know, there's a lot of content out there that can be timeless. So it's like you can do it one time. You can create a one-time introductory about us video that parks on your website. Maybe you mess with it 2 years down the road or whatever, and that's a possibility. You could do that. But for the most part, you have to keep innovating and updating your content. And like we know, one thing I was going to mention about recording content in general is, you know, it's just like anything else. The more you do it, the better mm-hmm. you're going to be at it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so as you do more content, as you do more videos, you put yourself out there, you should be doing more and you're going to get better at it. So you should be updating it along the way. You know, if you shot a video from 3 years ago when you first started your wholesaling business, I guarantee you could probably do it better than what it was before. You know, right. For the most part, that's how most people would look at it, because mm-hmm. they probably shot it on their iPhone or whatever, and it was windy outside and their hair was messed up, or they, you know, had 30 extra pounds on their neck. You know, there's all those kind of conversations. We have a client that we onboarded, and some of the videos originally that he had sent us, he had lost 100 pounds, and he's like, you know what? I just realized I sent you these and I don't want to use these because I look totally different. So I got to re-record like all these videos. And so we did that.
Yeah.
But that kind of stuff, that kind of stuff will impact the recording of the videos. But again, that's where it's like the more fresh content you put out there, the better you're going to get at it. The more streamlined and efficient the flow of the videos will come into play. And so that can alleviate the issue of, well, if I get my acquisitions manager on this video today, but then they leave 6 months from now, well, I can just record the video in 6 months from now, just re-record it myself or the new acquisition manager, whatever it is. And of course that can be an uphill battle sometimes, but it's what keeps your marketing fresh in my mind.
Yeah.
What came to my mind too was, I don't know, when you visited Texas, have you ever been to an HEB, the grocery store? They've done really, really well, and they're only in Texas, but I think it was like the president was always in every commercial and every social media post and all. They used him really, really well. I'm curious how they, and then they always included him with sports figures. So like the Astros would be cooking with him or barbecuing, or then it was some of the Texans like JJ Watt and all that. And so they use sports really well with him all the time. And he's just left, I think, last year. So I'm curious how they, because if you think about every content marketing that they put out, it always had him as the face. And I'm curious how they move on from that. And I guess if they keep including sports figures, they can.
Yeah.
But they did a really good job of using that same character. And he was nothing special, but they did a really good job.
This is a really good point, though. So this is kind of going at a high level conversation at this point. And I love this because basically what this is even though the president is like, you know, a part of the organization or whatever, it's basically endorsements, right? Uh-huh. So you specifically said JJ Watt. Mm-hmm. He just retired this year. He's going to be relevant for probably another 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. People will start forgetting about him regardless of how excellent his career was until he gets inducted into the Hall of Fame in a few years or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's going to become irrelevant at some point. So the commercials that he's in, the organizations and the companies that he was a part of will have to infill his irrelevancy, and a new up and coming, say NFL defensive end, is going to have to take his spot. Mm-hmm. And so it's going back to keeping the content fresh and the video content fresh. I mean, Tom Brady is now retired. Tom Brady is probably going to last for quite a while in terms of like his face being on camera. The only exception I would say is like a Michael Jordan, which he's an outlier, of course, anyway, you know, his endorsements and stuff like that. But I remember, you know, I was a big NBA fan growing up, and I remember a lot of NBA players being on commercials, and then every once in a while I'll come across them on my social media feed, you know, somebody reposted the commercial from 2008 or 2009, and I'm like, oh, I remember that. But then I forgot about the player who has been irrelevant for 10 years.
Yeah.
So they the organization that they were, you know, on the commercial with had to basically replace that person because they're not relevant anymore. So
that's, my second question. Stuff. Yeah. My second question that
it might've been your third question. Actually. No, but
that popped up with,
I'm at five. Yeah,
I got like 10 more, So what's your opinion on, cause you were talking about the content you put out and the, I think it depends on the company, I guess, and itself, but you can speak to this, but should the content that you recommend or the videos, should it be like well-produced, professional was the word I'm looking for, professional or raw. Just somebody gets an iPhone and just raw. What's your, I think that's a struggle too.
Yeah, great question. So it's subjective. Again, like when I'm working with clients, all 40, 50 plus of my clients, every single one of them have a different strategy that we work with because it all depends on your demographic. The method that I say, and I'll go back to answering your question specifically, but I want to have, you know, kind of a waterfall topic to talk about here. So the biggest key to this is understanding who your demographic is, which is marketing 101, but then actually where they hang out on digital, you know, and then what they consume. You might think it's crazy, but not everybody listens to podcasts. Not everybody's demographic listens to podcasts. Not everybody's demographic watches TikTok videos or consumes Facebook, or, you know, like there's my wife has a sister who is 15 years old, and her and her friends think Facebook's for old people. I'm like,
like by
dude, space. I'm only 29 and I have Facebook. I'm not old, but it's the reality is that her demo, if I'm marketing to her demographic, I'm not going to be marketing on Facebook or putting relevant social media content out on Facebook because it's going to be a miss.
Yeah.
So the reality of it is that going back to what they consume is, okay, do they consume produced or raw content or somewhere in between there? In the real estate space, especially if you're marketing to wholesalers, so let's take, for instance, I have a coach, let's just call him Coach Bob, is a wholesaling coach, mm-hmm. and he's marketing to wholesalers. Generally speaking, wholesalers, their demographic, they care about instant value. So we've got to make sure that the first 3 seconds, there's something that's a hook statement within that video. But they don't really care if it's ultra produced, if they're sitting in a super professional corporate mm-hmm. office, or you know, there's all kinds of transitions, there's corporate sounding music underneath it. Like there's those kind of technical aspects that it really comes down to. As a business owner, it's all of our responsibilities, and if you have a marketing director, to know our target demographic better than they know themselves. You got to know their tendencies. You got to know their behaviors, how they consume content. There's oftentimes like it's a little creepy, but I'll watch people on their phones and just see how fast they're scrolling through content, what they stop on mm-hmm. or what apps they consume on, because yeah. I want to learn the behavioral, mm-hmm. You know, components of how people consume content. And that's a very important piece of it, but it sounds complicated, but really if you know your demographic, then that it's not going to be that big of an issue for you. There's some people that we work with, you know, I'll give you a great example. Good friend of mine, David Phelps, who, we do consulting with him and his team. We were servicing them, and then they got to a point where they desperately needed to take stuff in house. And for this reason is they needed ultra produced content, but I could not come out and film content with them. So they needed an in-house videographer, but their demographic is doctors, dentists, lawyers, primarily dentists that are in their mastermind for Freedom Founders. And that type of demographic typically doesn't like raw content. They want something that's a little bit more high-end produced because they're more on the professional side of mm-hmm. Demographics. And so it's really subjective on who your demographic is, what they consume, and you put yourself in that environment. Of course, like, again, if you're a wholesaler or say you're buying rentals and you're marketing to motivated sellers, a great idea would be to put yourself in an environment that's relevant to what you're talking about. So if you're, you know, shooting a video on the process of working with a wholesaler, put yourself in front of a house that you might buy, or maybe you do have under contract mm-hmm. and record yourself in the front yard talking about the subject
yeah.
because now you're in a relevant space that's going to be directed towards your demographic. And mm-hmm. so that's really what it comes down to when it comes to the question of produced, raw, edited, yeah. somewhere in between. That's how it answers.
This is some really good, valuable information for our listeners. So let's like, and you're right. I think sometimes we complicate things, right? Instead of just getting started, right? And then, of course, you get better as you move forward. But that's give that. Our listeners maybe some practical tips that they can take away with. I mean, just starting out with social media, what tips would you give them to start out?
The first thing I would say is, and I'm going to put two sides to this piece of advice, is audit what your potential competition's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Go through what they're doing, figure out like, okay, what's working for them, what's not working for them. The flip side of it is, and that, let me go back. So the reason why that's a great tactic and strategy is because it's real hardcore data mm-hmm. that you're looking at, stuff that's already either working or already not working, and you know that it is. The flip side to that coin is, you know, I can't tell you guys how many times I get on a call with somebody and they're like, do you see, you know, I see what this person's doing and I really want to do that. Can you guys do that? And my initial response is, well, do you have the same business model as that person?
Right.
Because you don't know what goes on behind the curtain. You yep. have no clue. Doesn't matter how big somebody is on Instagram, how big quote unquote their podcast is, how many subscribers they have on YouTube. There's always variables. There's right. always things that you do not see mm-hmm. that will impact those numbers. Okay. Absolutely. So that's the other side of the coin. So don't get sucked into what I call social envy. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're looking at what other people have and then you're envious of it. And then you're not patient enough to do it. And ultimately, again, Sean, that's why people drop off a lot of times, is because they set too high of expectations mm-hmm. without having the right personnel, direction, all right. that. And so that's what I would say is start off with that. Then like step two would be study your demographic as much as you possibly mm-hmm. can. And that when I say demographic, I'm not, you know, of course we know this, but some people will say like, everybody's my demographic, but that's not true. Yeah. What I look at is I figure out one type of person, typically if I'm already working with them or if I want to work with them, and say, this is exactly who I want to work with and why. Mm-hmm. And I like boil down every bit of their persona, how they act when I'm on a call with them, how they act on social media, how they act when I'm like in person with them, or when they're treating other people, how they treat their employees and what comes out of their mouth and stuff like that. And that's the type of person that I want to work with. So I'm going to gear all my marketing and all my social content towards that person. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a very clear cut example. This gets a lot of, it's kind of like, it's one of those things where it really hit really hard in our industry mm-hmm. quickly. And then it got quickly diffused, was the whole hustle and grind mm-hmm. community yeah. and that mentality. Mm-hmm. I am not on board with that. I never have been. One of my friends, Tom Kroll, he says, he's got a great statement that says hustle's for the season, not a lifestyle. And I fully believe that. So when you're getting started, obviously like, there's a lot that goes into that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But at some point you need to pull yourself out of that if you're going to be an actual CEO business owner.
Right.
But that type of person I don't work with. I have in the past, but mm-hmm. that type of person is the one that's calling me at 11 o'clock at night for a stupid question that I'm like, dude, really? Or yeah. they're the type of person that they're always looking at what other people have. They're like, this person's doing this. This person's doing it. Can we do this? Can we do that? So their expectations are here. Their budget's here.
Yeah.
Right. So they're cheapies. That's generally what it is. So I got so specific that person, I go as far as to, if I'm about to get on a call with a lead that's coming into me, I go check out their social. If they have one post about hustle and grind, I cancel the call and I say, I'm sorry, I can't work with you at this time. I get that specific.
I might have put that on. Just kidding.
So that's like, and so I won't work with you guys, right? Like, but that's how specific I got. And people need to get that specific.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they'll be able to craft all of their content around that. Because if the reality is what you put out will attract leads in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll attract the right ones or the wrong ones.
Right. Yeah.
You pretty much get to choose which side that goes on depending on what you put out.
Yeah.
If you're just getting started, is audit your competition, figure out your demographic, what do they consume? What topics are they asking questions about? Shoot videos on that. Keep it as simple as possible. Yes. You don't have to build out a studio like these guys did. It took them, they have a master on the other side of the camera did all this.
Correct, and this is evolved.
That's
what people
get better.
Yes, you get better. You and add things.
That's the explanation point there. Yeah. Get started. Yes.
Yeah. So are followers more important versus the actual content you put out? Like, you know, because there's that whole.
Yeah.
The amount of followers versus the actual people that are following you that they enjoy.
Quality over quantity.
Thank you.
Okay. So once again, great question. It's subjective for everybody. There's mm-hmm. some people that we work with that followers are important, but I never allow it to be the number one metric to track. Because followers do not always result in ROI and sales. And of course, in the organic world, it's very hard to measure ROI mm-hmm. just because mm-hmm. of the nature of how it works.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily built more for brand awareness and credibility, but that's where it leans towards. That being said, what I always encourage people to focus in on is, again, going back to what is your North Star? What are you trying to achieve with your marketing efforts? Measure that and use the social media to push people that way. And there's ways that you can, you know, ensure that your social strategies are intertwined with your sales process. So that'll get technical. So we won't go into that.
Yeah.
But the example I use is, you know, there's the scenario that we could look at. There's one or two ways. So let's take, for instance, you take a video. Again, we'll use the example of a wholesaler. Mm-hmm. You post a video on YouTube and you say, you know, I'm looking for motivated seller leads and blah, blah, blah. Like I want to work with this type of person. Call us if you are looking to sell your house. Let's say it gets 10 views on it, but they generate two deals that are $40,000 wholesale assignments. Was it successful?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, of course. But if it's somebody outside looking in and they weren't in that internal sales process, they may be like, dude, Sean, you only got 10 videos on that or 10 views on that video. You need some help. Mm-hmm. But then Sean knows, no, we did what I wanted it to do. I got like 80 grand worth of ROI on that one video.
Right.
But then you look at the other side. If it got 100,000 views, but it didn't generate any deals for you, was it successful?
Yeah.
In some people's eyes on the outside, the answer would be yes. But you know internally, and this is why I go back to the conversation of like, there's always variables. Mm-hmm. You never know what's going on behind the curtain. Just because numbers are stacking up. I mean, it was popular years ago, and Instagram's kind of squashed this now, but it's popular years ago to buy followers on Instagram for credibility's sake. Mm-hmm, it was cool to say I had 50 to 100,000 followers on Instagram, but you bought those and then you could tell just by the engagement on posts when like you had 100,000, you know, followers, you posted a video and it got 12 likes. It's like, mm-hmm. and like two comments, like, okay, well, you know, what happened there?
Right.
And there are credible ways. You know, there's an agency I love working with, and they do Instagram growth, but they do it in page shout out form. So basically they built multiple pages that have 3-5 million followers on them in any given topic, business, real estate, wholesaling, you know, just about anything. And what they'll do is they'll take some of your content, post it on theirs and say, I recommend you go follow Josh Culler for social media content. And then real followers will come to me. And I like that because they actually have to click on my profile, come to me. They have to look through my content, decide if they like it or not. Then they have to click follow. So it's not a bot. It's not right. anything generic yeah. at all. It works. That can actually result in sales, especially again, the importance of putting out the right type of content will filter people that aren't going to be serious with you and people that are going to be serious with you and could buy from you. So that in a nutshell is kind of the argument that I would have for that type of question. And again, it is subjective per person. So don't let people pull the wool over your eyes and say, you know, I've got, you know, a million followers. I know I've had clients in the past that paid to get a million followers and it did nothing for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. That's love sweet. It. This is all great. So I don't think why don't you talk about Culler Media, what you do with your client, for your clients, right? And of course, how our listeners can get a hold of you.
Yeah, of course. So again, basically what we do is there's three core components that we operate in or under is social media content, podcast, and YouTube. And it's literally start to finish. So the only thing we ask clients to do is to record content themselves, which I act as the consultant with my clientele. We were on an onboarding call just before I got on this podcast and we walked through a whole strategy of so it's basically I create the strategy and then we implement it. I have a COO that takes all of it and implements it with our team. So it's literally start to finish.
Yeah.
And we give everybody the playbook so they're not having to decide, you know, we're not order takers or anything like that. We decide what they're doing and it's all based on their demographics and stuff like that and what their goals are and what they're trying to accomplish with social. So it's start to finish. So it's social media. And then if you're doing YouTube or podcast, you record the content, we have a process to get it to us. And we do everything from start to finish with it, including publishing. And that's where, you know, it's at this point, like we roughly produce and push out about 5,000 pieces of content a week across all platforms for all of our clients. So the advantage to that is I have a lot of data that I get to look at and see what works and what doesn't.
Right.
A lot of it stacks up. So I know what works and what doesn't. And that's essentially what it is. And I do offer consulting as well. So if you're somebody that's like, I can't afford you guys right now, but I know I need to start doing this stuff, I can do consulting as well. So
I guess
if you guys wanted to contact myself, you can, you know, go to my website, colormedia.com, or I'll just give you guys my email address. It's just josh@colormedia.com. So
yeah. And we'll have all this in the show notes as well. Yeah. So they know how to get in touch with you. But one of the questions that we always ask our guests on the show is
from David Phelps.
Yeah, it actually came from David Phelps in his book.
And he's a guest of the show.
Yep.
Yeah. Figures.
All the great guys are on our show, right?
Yeah.
But what's your next? What are you looking to accomplish in the next 5 to 10 years?
Oh, that's a great question. And David's asked me that before. Yeah. I actually had a really great conversation with him last year about this.
Oh, nice.
Mine is a lot more personal than anything.
Mm-hmm.
In the business world, I leverage and of course I'm a young business owner, so I may have the wrong outlook on this, and I'm open to criticism. But one of my good friends, I think you guys know him, Matt Andrews, mm-hmm. he says that like your business is not the thing; it's the thing that gets you to the mm-hmm. thing. And that's what I leverage it for. I'm much more of a lifestyle driven person. I focus a lot on my family. I focus a lot on things that I love doing. I have lots of hobbies, tons of things I love doing. And so my objective within the next 5 years is to completely pull myself out of my business, which at this point I'm roughly about what Gary told me about 65% out of my business in the day-to-day operations, that is.
Wow.
And so the goal over the next 5 years is to 100% remove myself from that. And allow my COO to step into the CEO position and run the organization so that I can spend a lot of time on developing a family, developing fun travel and stuff like that. We don't have kids yet, and that is on the horizon. So that will be a next. I don't know when next, but it will be. And that, yes. And so that'll be the next for my life. And so that's, it's not a very specific thing, but it's ultimately what I'm steering towards.
Yeah,
so.
That's great. That's
a great answer. Yeah.
Anything you would have done? I mean, you've started so young as well. We also started at 19 years old. So, you know, but is there anything you would have done differently?
I think you guys might have the same answer as I would. You know, there's so many things that I could go back and be like, man, I wish I did this. I wish I did that. And it's like, you know, most people in our industry say, I wish I got started sooner, because mm-hmm. a lot of people in our industry are in their 30s, 40s, you know, some in their 50s. And they're like, I wish I would have started in my 30s as opposed to my 40s or 50s. You know, starting at 19, there's not much sooner than you could start. in my eyes, I always look at this like, I wouldn't change a thing. I honestly look at everything that's happened in my life has impacted one decision or another. Mm-hmm. I am a Christian as well. And so I believe that God put everything in my path and led me down where I'm going for a mm-hmm. specific reason. And so I think everything happens and has happened how it should, regardless of me liking it, liking the timing, liking the outcome, or anything like that. So I wouldn't change anything, because I believe everything that I have done and gone through has got me to where I am today.
Yeah.
And that's the truth.
Awesome. Good answer. Love that.
It's been a phenomenal conversation.
It has been. Yeah. You added so much value. So I hope our listeners were taking notes, because I got a lot out of it. Yeah. So, yeah. Josh, I can't thank you enough, or we can't thank you enough for being on the show today. So thank you.
It was a lot of fun. You guys are great hosts, and you ask a lot of really good questions. Some of those questions I've actually never answered directly like that. So it was off the cuff.
You did great.
Awesome. You guys are good.
Well, thank you again. If there's anything we can do for you, please let us know. But otherwise, we'll see you probably at the next mastermind. But otherwise, we appreciate this. Guys, reach out to Josh if you're looking to work with him. We'll have all his info in the show notes. And thank you again, Josh. And we'll see everybody next week.
See ya, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkle. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talk, talk, talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.